people will die. That is the burden of duty. We are not civilians who, for the most part, only hurt themselves and perhaps a handful of others when they fail. If you cannot handle this truth, then let someone else take your place. Because I promise you this much, there will be worse to come, no matter what happens with this empire. The galaxy is not a nice place. We know this too well. No one spoke as he took a breath, forcing himself to relax. Honor the dead and the suffering of the survivors by working hard, that failure may come as rarely as possible, but never pretend to perfection, because that is the path to worse than failure. It is the path to dishonor.
Man, Raze, Steph said dryly from where he had been standing as Eric walked off the bridge. Sometimes you can be a pontificating son of a bitch, you know that, right?
Eric glanced up at his friend, who was still wearing his sweat-soaked flight suit.
Tell me something I didn't figure out a long time ago, he replied wearily. And what the hell are you doing up here? You should be getting some downtime in case we need to redeploy.
Not going to happen, and you know it, Steph said. No way we can reload on antimatter anytime soon, not with the mess everything else is in, and there aren't enough drones to deploy a decent sensor picket. They're working on more, but it'll be days at least.
They'll have their days, Eric said as he continued past, Steph following. There's nothing we can do here now except watch and wait to see where they go next.
They entered the lift, and the doors closed, causing Eric to bring his hand up to his face.
God, you're rank, Steph. Next time, shower before stepping onto my bridge, okay?
Steph just flipped him off, causing Eric to roll his eyes. Technically, it was insubordination, but he was well aware that his friend knew better than to pull that sort of crap when others were present. So why are we just floating around out here? Steph asked finally.
Haven't even gone to stealth?
Not going to, Eric said. I want them to see us, to know we're out here.
Why?
Steph asked, frowning.
You'll see if it works. And if it doesn't, it costs us nothing, Eric told him as the lift arrived on the habitation deck.
I need some time alone, Steph.
And you need a shower. Go, get cleaned up. We have a lot more work ahead of us.
Ah, Skipper.
Chapter 24 Allied Earth Command, Cheyenne Mountain Facility. Admiral Grayson winced as the map was updated, based on the report pulsed in from the Odysseus via a relay through Ankeel. They hadn't expected any different, of course, as there was no real chance of the small fleet they'd assembled being able to hold off the massive numbers on the Imperial side of things, but it was still unpleasant to see the official news hit the board. When the Empire had redirected to the Doran system, they had taken the wind out of a lot of the Primine sails on Rankeel, as far as she could gather. While not a core planet in the least, it was on a much more direct-line course into the Primine's more populous worlds, and that meant that the population of Doran was commensurately higher than any previous targets. They were getting close to the heart of the colonies now, and it was beginning to show. She didn't know how that population was at the moment, and could only wish the best to them.
At least they had a bit of a warning, though in a few days there are limits on what can be done.
Now everyone was waiting to see where the Imperial fleet would go next. It was a hard thing, really, being forced into a purely defensive and reactionary position. Grayson preferred to take the initiative and make the moves that the enemy had to react to. Fighting a defensive war meant that you didn't have the power to take the fight to the enemy, and that always meant that you were going to lose a lot of people, both soldiers and civilians. She had endorsed Weston's current strategy, one of the few viable ones available to them at the time, but she despised it deeply, because she didn't have to look far in history to see the plan in action. Playing the enemy for time by sacrificing territory was an often winning strategy, it was true. But territory was never the only thing you had to sacrifice when you employed it. A lot of people are going to die, she thought with certainty as she looked around the big control room, and wondered how many of her colleagues would have had the guts to back the Commodore's suggestion if Terran humans were on the chopping block. A lot fewer of them, she suspected. A great deal fewer. She doubted that the Primine would be so quick to consider such a move in the future, either. Not once the Butcher's Bill officially came due.
It was one thing to see the numbers on a sheet, another to walk through the aftermath of such a move. Sacrificing worlds to the Empire in order to draw them out, playing for time, a solid strategic move, but one that was cold. She shifted her focus to another feed that she was monitoring, an FTL link to the Heliobeam world discovered by Captain Passer and the Autolycus on their first mission for Project Prometheus, but there was nothing new from that source. Ask me for anything but time. Words that could be the mantra of any strategist in history, she thought. Weston was doggedly going to buy her every bit of time he could. She just hoped it would be enough. Humans were fascinating creatures. The vast majority had no idea what was being decided in this isolated room, of course, and so life went on for them without pause or consideration. But they were not entirely ignorant. Gaia knew that the threat of attack from beyond the atmosphere was now an ingrained communal nightmare for effectively the entire species. Sadly, the incidence of violent arachnophobia had increased significantly as well, given the physical resemblance between the Drossen and spiders. The similarities were only on the surface, of course, but that was enough for a lot of people. Spiders were having a bad time on Earth since the invasion, which was in turn leading to all sorts of other issues with insect populations increasing unchecked. Honestly, humans were just as frustrating as they were fascinating. Still, for the moment, she was happy to focus on the fascination. She stood just behind Grayson's position, amused by the Admiral's decision to largely ignore her presence as much as she was irritated by many of the others' actions and thoughts. As the Admiral privately believed, Gaia could attest that many of those in the room were just happy that the fighting was happening as far away from Earth as possible. She could understand, if she were to be honest. She was quite happy with that herself. Where she took offense was the secret joy some of the people present had over the deaths of any aliens, whether they were allies or not. They were more politic than to admit such things, of course, but that hid nothing from her. She had seen many men and women like that over the years. Most of them were kept in check by the need to be perceived as noble, but their rot thrived under the surface. Occasionally, men would somehow gain power despite having no skill at hiding their feelings whatsoever, which normally was for the best, but occasionally turned very badly very quickly. It was part of the human condition that she herself had once felt strongly aligned with, but as time progressed and the attitudes of people with it, her thoughts moved even more quickly, since she had the ingrained understanding that all people on Earth were merely that. People. It was no giant leap from that to the realization that the populations of other worlds such as Doran, the poor world the Empire was occupying, were no different. People were people, the galaxy over. She had been so used to being the all-seeing goddess of her sphere, however, that the knowledge that there was so much more out there had come as something of a shock. Then the invasion had hammered that home with decisive force. She wondered how Odysseus was faring. There was a powerful draw in that knowledge, and she looked to the map where the flags lit up, showing the last known location of the ship known colloquially as the Warrior King. There was so much more to the universe than even she had known. Primine Central Command, Rankiel. Tanner looked on grimly, a twisting hook in his gut. The report from the ships deployed to Doran had not been unexpected, of course. There really had been no other option than to let the Imperials into that system to do as they would. That did not make it any easier to see the colors change on the map and know that an entire world had fallen to invasion and was even then likely being bombarded from orbit. The only consolation he could take from the conquest was that at least it didn't involve the Drossen. The colony on Doran would likely still exist, and survivors would probably be found if a liberation could be mounted. Whether that day would be forthcoming was the question that gnawed at him. The Forge was not only building new ships and materials as quickly as possible, but also building new facilities to construct those new ships and materials. Given time, Tanner didn't doubt that between the Primine facilities and those being manufactured by the Terrans, they could eventually put together a force that would make the Empire reconsider whether it was truly worth the costs to wage this war of theirs. But time was not a commodity in easy supply. He knew better than almost anyone else just how long it would take to mount a credible defense against the Imperial forces they knew of, to say nothing of what else was hiding in the wings. Whatever else Commodore Weston could manage, there was just no chance of him delaying the Imperial forces even remotely that long. There was already talk of surrender to forestall the destruction associated with an all-out invasion, but Rael doubted whether that would work. The two worlds already bombarded had no defenses to speak of, and that had not deterred the Imperials from their course of action. Tanner supposed it was possible they might want to keep the more developed assets of Rankiel intact, as he would in their place, but so far they hadn't done anything as he would choose. If he were ordered to surrender, he likely wouldn't object much, at least not once the fleet was in the system. He just didn't think surrender would accomplish much beyond making the Imperials' job a little easier in the short term and allowing his people to further study the behavior of the Empire during nonviolent conquest. Rael wondered if he was presiding over the end of Primenae culture, however, and just what would happen after all of what he knew disappeared. If that should come to pass, Nero will find out just how well his forces are trained, if nothing else. Calling that a cold comfort would be giving it far too much consideration, but there was something about the idea of those men, who were, even then, preparing for the worst, that left him with a shard of hope. He prayed that they would never be needed, but Tanner was glad that they were there. The insanity was growing beyond all reasonable proportions. Since the Drossen had shown up and brought the Terrans' attention with them, everything was on a constant headlong rush into oblivion, and Central was not happy. It had taken millennia to carefully prune back the prone-to-violence aspects of the Primenae, forming them into a harmonious culture that respected the universe instead of desiring to subjugate it. This hadn't been his plan, of course, but rather a desire of the people when they fled persecution by those that he now suspected had later formed the Empire. His actions had been an extension of their group ideals. Ideals that were now being destroyed with every subsequent event that passed. The first time he encountered then-Captain Weston, Central had known that he was facing a decision between survival and extinction. There was no choice, of course. He was human to his core in a way that even humans were not. His instincts were human. His experiences were more human than any single person could come close to being, and humans were survivors. He knew he couldn't sacrifice the Primenae on an altar of their ideals. Reality would always win when faced with an ideal. It hurt so very deeply, however, to watch those long-held ideals begin to crumble. Central rather thought that it might not have been so bad if the destruction had come from within, if the Primenae had realized that the ideals were not what they wanted, or that they would not work. That would have been painful, but less traumatic. To have them work, however, and then see the culture torn down by barbarians from the outside, Central was furious in ways he could not easily remember being. Chapter 25 Lord's Own Dreadnought, Empress Leon, Doran Orbit. Yesan looked down on the world below as he stood at the center of his command deck, the great billows of smoke pouring from the locations of the kinetic strikes that had ravaged the world's infrastructure. Surface forces were being deployed even as he watched, the flames of landers scorching through the atmosphere as they descended to the planet below. "Status of our friends out there?" he asked, not looking around.
"Still holding position, my lord."
Yesan grunted thoughtfully. "Well, I suppose they have nothing more important to be doing than watch now, do they?" He made his tone flippant, but the presence of the fleet in the outer system was something of a concern. He would have to leave a security force in orbit if he were to hold the world below.
"Prepare the fleet for departure," Yesan said finally, walking over to a computer station and gesturing. "Inform the captains on this list that they will provide security for the world below until we return."
"Yes, my lord,"
his second responded quickly, accepting the orders and attached data files.
"It will be done."
"Of course it will," Yesan replied, turning away from the man.
AEV Odysseus.
"Commodore, they're moving out."
Eric looked up from his coffee as the message came down from the bridge. He picked the mug up and hit the response button on his comm.
I'm on my way.
He made his way through the corridors of the big ship, moving quickly but keeping from showing too much haste with some level of discipline. He wanted very much to observe the Imperial departure, but there was no real advantage to rushing, and in general it wasn't a good idea for the crew to see their commanding officer running around like he'd lost his mind. Even so, he reached the bridge in short order, eyes already finding the telemetry displays.
"Talk to me," he said to Miriam as he stepped into his station.
"They've left an orbital force," she said. "It appears to be only 10 ships, though, none of their larger ones."
Eric was unsurprised on some level. "Cold calculations?"
"Sir?"
"They're challenging us," he said, "leaving enough of a force to bleed us a little, but clearly not enough to keep us from retaking the planet. I would hazard a guess that they likely have orders to withdraw after a token effort, if we move in."
"Will we, sir?" Miriam asked, uncertain.
"Negative. They're doing exactly what I want them to do, Commander. Never interrupt the enemy when he's in the middle of making a mistake."
She recognized the quote, of course, but wasn't certain how the application of it fit the current situation.
"Mistake, Captain?"
"My orders are to play for time," Eric said, "which is all for the good, and I agree with them on a certain level. But playing for time is a little like playing to lose. And I don't like losing, Commander. Think Eastern Front, Miriam, and we're playing the role of the Russians."
He thought about it. "That didn't work out so well for the Russians, as I recall."
"They won,"
Eric said grimly, his eyes now following the telemetry of the enemy's main body. "But you have a definite point there. If I had another strategy available, I would pick it, I assure you of that." He would, without hesitating, in fact. In many ways, the only thing worse than winning with the strategy he was putting into play was losing with it, and even then the two options were a close contest. In a more conventional conflict with an enemy he had a measure of respect for, he might prefer to fight a decisive battle early on and accept the loss. The damage to civilian lives and infrastructure would be lessened, and the overall lives lost would be negligible compared to what his current strategy would inflict, win or lose. Sacrificing territory for time while prosecuting the war with every resource available to him was and would be a bloody fight from start to end. The ploy was, in many respects, a worse option than a fast and decisive loss. In World War II, the Russians had prosecuted such a strategy. They lost entire cities, swaths of land were razed to the ground, and all but salted, so nothing would grow again. And 24 million people died before it was over. France, as a counterexample, fought a short decisive war that ended with their defeat, after which they mounted an underground war with the help of allies. By the end of the war, French military and civilian losses barely exceeded 500,000 total. Granted, the Soviets had just over 4 times the population of France at the time, but even so, the differences in loss tallies were stark. The problem was, if your enemy was the sort who might start throwing huge chunks of your population into camps, commit genocide, or worse, and you knew it, well then, bleeding them out by any means became the only reasonable course of action. It might cost more lives and more infrastructure, but some nightmares are worth damn near any price if they could be avoided. Since the Empire had opened this war with the Drossen, Eric was in no mood to put any trust in their civility as a people.
"Track them when they go to FTL and plot their destination," he ordered. "I want the fleet transitioned out of this system as soon as we have those numbers."
He paused. "Oh, and order all ships to stealth mode now. No sense letting the local picket force get too comfortable. Let them think we're still lurking around even after we're gone."
"Aye, aye, Captain."
Lord's own dreadnought, Empress Leon.
"My lord, the screens."
Yesun glanced up, noting that the screens were empty.
"Where did they go?"
"We believe they've engaged their stealth systems," his adjutant informed him. "Still working to confirm that, however."
Yesun nodded, unsurprised. With the main force leaving, there was no point in the enemy forces advertising their continued presence any longer. He was uncertain as to what they would do exactly, but it was clear that from this point, they would do it in secret.
"No changes to my standing orders," he said simply.
"Of course, my lord." The enemy were as amusing as they were frustrating, he decided. He honestly wondered what they would do once he left. Chase after his forces, or remain to liberate the world he was leaving behind. Neither option mattered much to him. Both, in fact, played into his hands. If he could bleed the Oathers' forces out by having them constantly liberating lost worlds and wasting resources trying to save the people whose infrastructures he'd just destroyed, all the better. If they chased after his main force, he would bleed them out piece by piece in open combat. Either way, ultimately, he won. It just became a matter of how long before victory was assured. Privately, he expected them to liberate the world, which would lose him a few ships, assuming they went in with full force. It was a low-order risk in the short term for the Oathers, and their psychology would militate against leaving people to suffer under the Overlord's boot. The insidious nature of losses through attrition would become their worst enemy in the long run, but Yasan suspected that the Oathers wouldn't be able to help themselves even if they realized as much. The only uncertain factor was their allies, but from what the Empire had been able to work out based on past encounters, that species seemed in possession of a similar savior complex. Any sane ship's captain would not have put their sole vessel between the Drossen and their prey. A man who would do that will do anything to save an entire world of poor oppressed victims, Yasan thought, amused. He will not be able to help himself. AEV Enterprise. James looked over the displays as he stood in the center of the slightly curved bowl that was his command deck. The enemy ships had gone superluminal a few minutes earlier, by ship time. In actuality, they had been gone from the system now for several hours, and the light was only just getting caught up to the fleet. In short order, he knew, they would have vector data on the enemy fleet's next objective, and then it would be time to jump out ahead of them and do the whole thing over again.
Sir!
Step up, Keg. Tell me what's on your mind, James said without looking around. He knew his officers' voices well enough. Commander Hawkins stepped up beside him, a data plaque in hand.
Readiness reports for the squadron, sir.
Thank you. James accepted the report, but didn't look at it.
Summary?
Fighting trim, sir.
Good to know. Never doubted it.
James allowed a slight smile before his features turned somber again. You know they'll be looking for you next time, right?
Wouldn't be any fun if they weren't, sir.
No, James allowed. I don't suppose it would be. How are we on the FTL missiles?
Couple full loads, still manufacturing more, but it's slow on board now that we've exhausted stock parts. We'll need a resupply of basic material shortly, or we'll have to stop altogether. We'll have time to transship from the logistics vessels on the other side. Make your lists. You know the drill.
Yes, sir. Needs, wants, and wishes, Hawkins confirmed.
Wilco.
Incidentally, Commander Black wants me to push a request of hers up channels.
The FTL cause for Vorpals? James asked, amused.
How did you ever guess, sir? You must be a mind reader,
Hawkins replied, just barely able to keep a straight face as he did.
I can't imagine, James said dryly. You can inform the commander that the request has been approved. Time is the only question at this juncture, and that's the one question I'm unable to answer.
Understood, sir. And Black gets that, too. She just wants to be sure it isn't forgotten. Stephanos blew circles around us in that heap of his, and being able to outrun light is a hell of a way to fly.
James chuckled, not doubting that for a moment. It was actually a limited advantage, of course, since in order to be combat effective, you often had to fly into laser fire. Thus, the ability to outrun light didn't amount to much in those circumstances, but the option would still be appreciated.
Honestly, I'm more interested in the drones the Commodore has the fleet manufacturing right now, James admitted. Picket drones with hyperspectral scanners and limited FTL comms? Those are a game-changer. No offense to your fighter-jock sensibilities, Commander.
None taken, Captain. You're right, Hawkins said seriously.
And I agree. If only because being able to adapt faster to enemy fire means that the E will be waiting for us when we get back from the sharp end of things.
They stood in silence for a moment before Hawkins spoke up again.
Do you think it'll be enough of a game changer, sir?
James sighed.
I wish I could say yes, Cag. I wish I could say yes.
AEV Odysseus.
Odysseus stared at the world, so far away and yet seemingly so close. It was growing smaller, even by the scanners he could use like they were his own eyes, the Odysseus and fleet moving away at high speed as they worked to analyze the vectors associated with the enemy's departure.
"We need those scanners."
The boy entity jerked around, surprised. That was a feeling he almost never experienced, and he was shocked by a flush of shame. He wasn't sure, but it wasn't a pleasant emotion.
"How did you know?" Odysseus asked, though he knew the answer even as the question came out.
"One of our more powerful scanners is tasked to observe the planet with no requisition code on the file," Eric said as he approached. "The only people on board who could do that wouldn't. Not now. They know we need every scanner on the enemy fleet."
"I'm sorry."
"Don't be. I understand," Eric said. "Just release the scanners so we can do the job that needs doing."
"Already done,"
Odysseus confirmed.
"Thank you," Eric said, leaning on the wall of the corridor off the command deck that Odysseus had moved to some minutes earlier. "Need to talk about it?"
"Everyone has deep emotions and confusing thoughts about the world we're leaving," Odysseus said after a moment. "I don't understand."
"What? That they're thinking about the world?"
"No, I understand that," Odysseus said. "I mean, the confusing, conflicting thoughts. Even the same person thinks different things at almost the same time. That it's the right thing to leave, but it's the wrong thing to do, too. That we're running from a fight, but not really? I don't understand it."
"The crew doesn't understand it either," Eric said. "Even I don't get it." "Sometimes you don't have to understand everything, Odysseus. Sometimes you just do the job, whether it makes any sense to you or not. If we waited until all made sense, very few things in this universe would ever be done."
He chuckled a little, though the humor didn't reach his eyes, mind, or heart.
"Don't try to make sense of humans, son," Eric said simply. "We're a confusing lot at the best of times, and you're a warship. I doubt you'll ever see us at the best of times."
He exhaled, not noticing Odysseus staring at him for a moment as he looked back toward the bridge.
"I have a feeling that you will see us at our worst, however," he said finally. "Try to keep in mind that stress and anger aren't our default conditions. Don't judge the crew too harshly."
"I do not think that is a concern, Commodore,"
Odysseus said slowly.
"In a very real way, I am the crew. That would be judging myself, would it not?"
Eric smiled.
"I suppose it would. I have to get back to work. When we're done, well, you can use the scanners for whatever you like."
"Thank you."
The entity observed the Commodore as he walked out, heading back to the bridge.
"We have a vector, Captain,"
Miriam relayed as Eric stepped back onto the main deck of the bridge.
"Good. Lay it in and signal the logistical fleet. Let's get ahead of these pricks."
Soft, almost nervous chuckles rippled around the bridge. He recognized the fear he was hearing there, but studiously ignored it, and treated the laughter for the genuine enthusiasm everyone else pretended it to be. With the Odysseus leading the way, the fleet of warships pivoted in space and seemed to drift for a brief moment until the transition drives executed the jump into tachyon transition. Ship by ship, they vanished into the black. Behind them, they left another world under the control of a hostile force. Ahead of them lay more of the same.
Chapter 26. Allied Earth Command, Cheyenne Mountain Facility. 3 weeks. Grayson had been monitoring the Odysseus task group's progress for that long since their initial confrontation with the Imperial fleet. Over that time, the Empire had managed to acquire 5 more planets and tally up a kill score of 9 rogues and a heroic to their credit. Granted, the kill ratio massively favored Weston's people, with at least 40 of the Imperial cruisers falling to their new weapons and tactics, as well as an unknown but significant number of their parasite destroyers. Unfortunately, that was still a level of attrition that the enemy could afford, which neither she nor the Primine could even begin to contemplate for their own forces. Worse, they're lined up on Rankiel now. The Imperials were still a day or two out of the Primine Corps world, but she knew that was the line in the sand.
the Primine vessels wouldn't fall back any more, unless she was very much mistaken, and she wasn't certain if Commodore Weston would be willing to do so either, despite it all being his plan. There were billions at risk there, and ultimately the Forge facility would be cut off from supply and forced to reveal itself or die in the heart of the local star. If they lost Rankiel, Earth would be merely a formality shortly afterward. She glanced at the map that now showed 7 red stars, and the corresponding space tinted the color assigned to Imperial control. 7 worlds in less than 2 months. Weston's plan to drag this out has been working, but we've run out of territory to cede to the enemy. The Forge is too valuable. We could lose Rankiel, but not the Forge. The problem was that the enemy, even with their losses, still outmassed Weston's task group by an obscene number, and they'd gotten at least a little wise to the new tactics. Grayson knew that there wouldn't be enough to hold them off, which meant that they were all in deep shit. If there were ever a time for a miracle, this would be it. Primine Central Command, Rankiel. Tanner examined the estimated clock with an intensity he usually reserved for out-of-place junior officers, willing it to reverse its motion despite all the laws of the universe to the contrary. He set down a drink he had been nursing for some time, oddly calm as he did so. "Is this how it ends?" he asked, though no one was present to hear him. He liked to think it wasn't. Nero was preparing to fight the enemy on the ground, though officially the Council had the intention to issue an unconditional surrender as the Empire entered the system. Honestly, he didn't know how many people would obey the order, not after so many had already died in the colonies, but the situation would be out of his hands once the command was issued. His authority would be ended then in all official capacities, and in most realistic ways as well, since a large part of his power stemmed from the access to the command and control center he enjoyed at the Council's behest. He was at a loss as to how things had deteriorated so far while he had been at the helm. Tanner asked himself what could have been done differently to have achieved a better outcome. Ultimately, however, he couldn't find a path, not even in hindsight, that would have led to a different conclusion. Perhaps that was his failure, as much as anything else. The Odysseus and the task group under the command of Eric Weston had transitioned into the system mere hours earlier, preparing to mount the last-ditch defense of the world everyone knew was lost. Tanner was among those few who understood that it was not Rankiel they were preparing to defend, however, but access to the Forge. It was, perhaps ironic in a way, that the most desperate defense they had yet mounted against the Imperial forces would be in the defense of a world the Imperials had no idea even existed. Tanner laughed bitterly at that. Sometimes reality had a way of turning out more bizarre than any half-cocked fantasy dreamed up by humanity. Fantasy had a tendency to follow man's desire for the universe to make sense. Reality had no such compunctions. AEV Odysseus, Outer Rankiel System. Eric was tired. 3 weeks of fighting would do that to anyone, and had in fact done that to everyone. His crew was weary but unwilling to bend now as they prepared for what would likely be their second-to-last battle if they survived to see the end of it. He knew he would issue the order to withdraw when the system was lost. There was no real choice there. But Eric also knew that when he did, the war was over. For everything the Earth had going for it, his homeworld couldn't match the Forge for production of raw materials. The Admiral's construction of a system defense might hold for a short time, but even the miracle they were all hoping for from Prometheus wouldn't be enough to buy Earth a clear path to survival. Without ships, people, and resources to capitalize on Prometheus, it would be like spitting in the eye of an angry maniac who had his knife to your throat. Defiant, perhaps even courageous, but likely fatal. "Are we ready?" he asked as he walked up to where Miram was overseeing the status of the Odysseus. More than ever, Miram Heath had become the de facto captain of the Odysseus while he managed the task group. Her rank was a grade low for the duties she was handling, but the statuesque woman had borne up well under the work and left him with one less worry to keep him awake at night. "Aye, sir," she said. "All drones have checked out. Fighters from the Enterprise are ready to launch, and we've got 2 more drone squadrons from the Bell and the Bow, respectively."
Archangels to the last, Eric said, smiling. Fitting. Very well. Stand by to deploy on...
He was cut off by confused murmuring from the scanning station that caught his attention.
What is it, Lieutenant?
He asked the woman currently standing that watch.
Lieutenant Medellin shook her head. I'm sorry, sir. I must be doing something wrong, but I can't seem to track the incoming flux from the enemy drives. I had it earlier, but...
She put her hands up, disgusted.
Sorry, sir.
Eric walked over, then leaned over her shoulder and tapped commands into the system.
Don't get frustrated. Just run back through the steps and locate the...
Huh? He paused, blanked the system, and then re-entered the commands.
Mila, run checks through tactical. I'm not showing the enemy here,
he ordered, moving the lieutenant aside as he started running deeper into the system himself. He and Lieutenant Shans both worked furiously at the primary scanner station and the tactical weapons station, neither able to locate the inbound track. Eric gave it up.
I want to know when we lost them! Find those ships!
He stepped away, letting the lieutenant back into the station, and clapped a hand to her shoulder.
You did fine. Now find out where they went.
Yes, sir.
Eric strode back up to the center of the command deck, eyes a little wild as he tried to contain himself.
They changed course. If we don't figure out for where...
He shook his head. It should have been good news, frankly. They could sacrifice any other system, but Rankiel was the most valuable system left on the map due to the forge. Furthermore, he knew that the Imperials had obviously obtained enough intelligence to know the former, if not the latter.
The only other system remotely as valuable now is...
Eric froze.
Oh, shit.
He swung around into his station and opened a direct FTL to the Primine Central Command, using his code to punch right through to Cheyenne Mountain.
Admiral, Weston here,
he said quickly as the Admiral's face appeared on his screen.
I think you have trouble coming your way.
Allied Earth Command, Cheyenne Mountain Facility. Grayson strode through the Marine Guards, leaving confusion in her wake as she forced her way into SpaceCom with nothing short of murder in her eyes.
Admiral, there are protocols,
the watch commander protested. Fuck protocol, she said flatly. I need access to the Kardashev net.
If the Admiral would please tell me what she is looking for,
the commander tried, only to find himself pushed aside, as Grayson stepped across the floor and looked at everyone working there, who were all now staring up at her. Commodore Weston just informed me that the Imperial forces are no longer en route for Rankiel, she said loudly. By his estimation, only one world would draw their focus from there at this point in time. Earth. If they're coming here, there will be quantum flex as the bow shock of their warp drives affects gravity along their course. Find it. Everyone stared at her for a moment too long.
Right the hell now!
That got them working at least, while she stood over the pit and glared. It didn't take long for them to confirm her worries once they actually went looking for the flux. Grayson looked at the new icon that showed up on the projections map, her hands tightening around the rail in front of her.
Admiral, what does that mean?
The commander asked, staring. It means our fleet is out of position, and we're about to be caught with our pants down, she snarled, pushing off the rail and stomping out of the room. Lord's own dreadnought, Empress Leon.
So, this is the world that has been causing all the impossible-to-predict variables, Yason said as he looked at the long-range scans of the system, particularly the third planet from the local star. Unimpressive.
We are scanning significant stellar debris, my lord. There is evidence of Drossen in what was once the fourth world of the system, his second said. Now, of course, there is little more than a debris field there. Surviving a full Drossen invasion would rank as impressive, I suppose, Yason said simply. So perhaps I am corrected.
Fleet defenses?
Four of the enemy cruisers, a small contingent of the destroyers. Nothing significant.
Excellent. Yason said.
Deploy parasites and proceed deeper in system. Yason would be exceedingly pleased to eliminate the Othar's core world when the time came, but first it would be a pleasure to remove the last dregs of hope from the resistance, as he had a feeling that much of their newfound fighting spirit was an artificial addition. Judging from the lack of overall defenses,
They actually believed that we hadn't monitored the Drossen closely enough to realize the location of their home system. A fatal miscalculation. AEV Odysseus. Alarm sounded on all decks as the ship went to general quarters, waking everyone up, readying for a transition that no one had been expecting. All across the fleet, the same thing was going on, Eric knew, but it wasn't happening fast enough for his liking. The enemy had shifted their course at a still unknown point in time earlier, and all indications were that they had actually increased speed en route for Earth. He didn't know if he could possibly get the fleet moving in the time they had left, but he was going to damn well try. Earth Allied Command, Cheyenne Mountain Facility.
Well, here they come, Grayson growled as the enemy ships entered the outer reaches of the heliosphere.
This was the second alien invasion during her career. She had been forced to flee during the first. This time, she would stand her watch, as she should have done before.
Stand by to activate the Kardashev network, she ordered.
Kardashev net is standing by, Admiral.
Let them get in a little deeper, Grayson said firmly. We only have enough power for one good punch. May as well make it count.
Aye, aye, Admiral, an Air Force captain answered. Enemy fleet has entered the outer orbit of Neptune, proceeding sunward at high fractions of C, but slowing.
We have a lot of debris in system, Grayson said, thanks to their games with a Drossen. If they come in too hot, that sort of flight hazard will be a threat even to warp-shielded vessels.
Yes, ma'am.
Grayson stared at the screen, despising the feeling she was enduring as the number slowly fell along with the Imperial ship's approach. Somehow this was worse than watching the Drossen invasion, which had been like observing an approaching storm you knew you couldn't avoid. The Imperials shouldn't be that. They should be willing to talk, to negotiate.
Screw them.
Grayson glowered at the screen as the fleets continued to proceed on course for Earth. They were less than 10 hours out at current speeds.
The Washington and Mulan have taken up defensive positions just outside cislunar space, along with our available rogues.
Thank you, Captain. Inform them that they should hold position until the enemy makes their final approach, Grayson ordered. We'll open contact with the Kardashev network first.
Aye, ma'am.
Grayson nodded absently, tapping in a series of commands to her network as she glanced up at the numbers. The Imperials were approaching Uranus, which would bring them within the outer contact range of the current network of Kardashev satellites. Almost there. The Kardashev network, Earth's first true stellar construction project, slowly awakened at the Admiral's command. The distributed network of solar collectors had been primarily tasked with self-replication, but that hadn't been their ultimate purpose or design. At the command from Earth, the network began tracking the approach of the ships that bore no IFF transponders and pulsing energy via laser link from across the network to key positions. The Imperial ships proceeded deeper into the system and deeper into the network of satellites that were very nearly invisible by most standard means of detection. As the ships passed Saturn and headed for Jovian orbit, the network fully activated. All the power of the entire solar satellite network of well over 3 million individual self-replicating power collectors had been redirected and focused into just 3,000 of them. At the orbit of Jupiter, those 3,000 unleashed all that power across the system. Beams lanced out from one network node to another, intersecting the forward ships of the flotilla and slicing through them with startling ease. Powered by the sun in almost a year of collection, rather than a lone singularity, the beams dwarfed those of any shipboard weapons and turned armor into tinder in an instant. As the beams lanced through, they connected with another node, which redirected the beam onto the next target. The network only had the power for a few seconds of fire before it depleted its energy, but the display was impressive. In seconds, 100 ships burned in space. Lord's own dreadnought, Empress Leon. Yesan flinched from the startling display of destruction, just a little aghast as the forward parasites vanished in flame and laser light.
Impressive, he admitted as the beams died out.
Scan for those platforms.
We've located them, now that we know what to look for, his second said.
They must run off capacitors, as there was no evidence of any significant power generation before the laser grid opened fire.
Target and destroy the nodes, Yesan ordered, and scan for others.
Yes, my lord.
Lasers lanced out from the fleet, burning the platform steadily as the ships continued to travel deeper into the system.
Yesan found himself genuinely admiring his adversaries this time. That had been an impressive defense system, though from the scans he was assuming it was far from complete. Had the system been more encompassing, losses to the Empire might have actually been significant.
It seems to be for the best that we directed here, he decided with some satisfaction.
The defenses would have to be studied when the battle was over, to be certain, but he was confident that he would not have liked to see the results had the network been fully operational.
Target the enemy cruisers, he ordered as the ships acquired a solid lock on the last line of the system defense.
Fire as we enter maximum effective range. We shall end this.
AEV Odysseus.
Ready to transition, Commodore.
Coordinates to the stations, Eric ordered, sending the target coordinates. It took a moment before everyone had them, but he was unsurprised when the first objections were voiced.
Commodore, Robert said from the screens in front of him, those coordinates are deep inside the system.
I'm aware of that, Captain, Eric said. Check them and you'll see that I'm not crazy.
I know where they are, Commodore, Robert said slowly. However, it's a risk.
If we come in outside the heliosphere, we'll be too late. It'll be over before we arrive. We'll be fine, Eric said firmly. The coordinates stand.
He looked across the faces on the screen, his gaze challenging them to object, but his tone seemed to be enough.
Roberts nodded slowly.
Yes, sir.
Engage transition, Eric ordered.
The ships of the Odysseus task group came around slowly in space, locking onto their target light years away, and then vanished into the ether one by one, leaving only darkness in their wake.
Chapter 27 AEV Washington, Sol System.
Here they come!
Commander Burke, standing station at the weapons control for the Heroic-class vessel Washington, found himself facing what he might normally call a target-rich environment. In the current state of affairs, he didn't have time to think about it as he picked his targets and set the lasers to open fire, largely on their own. The parasite ships that were providing a destroyer screen for the oncoming enemy force were easily holed by the Washington's lasers, while he waited for the armament section to shift a new load of thermonuclear warheads to the transition cannon magazines. They'd fired their guns dry, along with the Mulan beside them and every rogue available, and lit space with hundreds of nuclear fireballs but barely dented the enemy armada. Burke, under the glare of his captain, was determined to make the enemy pay for every light second they gained into the system, but he didn't need anyone to tell him that it wasn't going to end well for the Washington as Imperial forces entered into extreme laser range. They clearly weren't interested in holding back.
Laser blooms!
Damage reports began screaming in from every deck as dozens of strikes rained down on them from the black. They were hammered, just as every other ship defending Earth orbit was, despite having attempted evasive maneuvering. There were too many beams coming in, and too few of the defenders were positioned properly to find clear space to evade into.
Take us around Luna, Captain Bricker ordered. Break their line of fire for a few minutes.
Aye, Skipper.
Burke largely ignored the maneuvering orders as he kept haloing targets on his panels and setting priorities for the computers to engage as weapons became available.
It's a hell of a thing, he thought, but we have more targets than we have weapons available to service them.
He was cut off from those targets as the Washington moved behind Luna, and he could hear the captain calling out orders.
We've got minutes, people! Get the hull breaches sealed and reroute power to all essential areas!
Burke mostly tuned out his captain's voice as he was barking orders of his own.
Shift those munitions to the live magazines as quickly as you can. I want to come out shooting.
AEV Mulan. Captain Giang Hung of the Mulan felt like his ship was stubbornly clinging to life just because it refused to roll over and die, much like her crew. They were billowing air faster than even the prodigious atmosphere generators on the big vessel could handle.
But somehow the massively redundant systems had tenaciously refused to go down. Half her weapons were gone, and the tally of lost lives had stopped coming in. He doubted it was because people had stopped dying, suspecting instead that no one was left counting. The Mulan followed the Washington, along with their surviving rogues, positioning Luna between them and the enemy briefly in order to gain a little time to patch the ship's most critical damage, and more importantly, reload depleted magazines from stores. Hung had never in his life imagined being in a situation where he would fire off well over 100 nuclear weapons and find that it hadn't even been close to enough. Allied Earth Command, Cheyenne Mountain Facility.
Transition alert!
Grayson gritted her teeth, knowing that it wouldn't matter. The Odysseus fleet was the only group of Allied warships maintaining significant force, and even though she was certain that was their signature arriving, they would be hours out. The fight over Earth would be over in minutes now, and Imperial doctrine would put an end to the human race as a space power. They'd be back to the Stone Age from kinetic strikes in mere hours.
Task Group Odysseus identified.
Grayson looked up.
What?
It should have been hours yet before they had a signal ID from the ships arriving via transition.
Task Group Odysseus moving to engage the enemy.
That's impossible. Grayson rose to her feet.
How?
They transitioned directly into the L2 Lagrange point, Admiral.
They what?
AEV Washington.
Ready weapons, Ricker ordered. We're about to clear Luna.
The few ships remaining of what had been Earth's defense fleet were flying low to the lunar surface, moving fast against the passing terrain below as they raced for the horizon and began to climb for altitude again. Computer systems began registering enemy targets as they appeared over the horizon, and in an instant, Burke was feeding priorities to the remaining weapons at his disposal with clearance to fire at will. The force swung around Luna, already firing all weapons as they prepared for the inevitable counterfire from the enemy fleet. The first enemy lasers began to rain down, once again raising alarms until they were suddenly cut off.
New contacts! IFF signals recognized! Captain, it's the Odysseus!
AEV Odysseus.
Deploy picket drones. Launch all fighter squadrons, Weston ordered, leaning forward as he fought not to puke all over his station.
The entire task group had transitioned to one of the stable gravity regions in the solar system, in this case the L2 Lagrange point, set by the Earth-Moon system. Targeting the small point had entailed a certain level of risk, but it appeared to have worked as best he could tell, though Eric felt somewhat worse for the trip than normal. He risked a sickly look over to where Miriam was struggling much as he was.
Did we lose anyone?
She covered her mouth, eyes clenched shut briefly before she looked over the data feed.
7 rogues aren't on our scanners, she said, her tone and body language more than a bit devastated.
Eric grimaced himself. He didn't know what had happened to the vessels, but it was safe to assume that they hadn't reintegrated. Possibly they'd jumped outside the stable gravity zone of the L2 point. Possibly something else. Steeling his stomach, Eric rose to his feet.
Lock transition cannons onto the parasite ships, he ordered. Clear a path. I want those Imperial cruisers.
Aye, Captain, Mila responded quickly. Targets locked. Transition cannons free. Firing.
Spheres of nuclear fire erupted across the Imperial fleet, tearing through the hundreds of parasite destroyers descending on their position as drones and fighters poured out of the vessels of Task Group Odysseus.
Lord's own dreadnought, Empress Leon.
That's not possible!
Lord Yason's oath went largely unnoticed, as everyone was far too busy dealing with the sudden increase in enemy fire that had come from nowhere. Yason was in a rage as he tore through the data available to him.
Were they hidden in stealth?
Why?
He asked.
Why sacrifice so many for what?
Unfortunately for the Imperial Lord, there were no answers to be found, as those around him tried but failed to explain the enemy's decisions. He shook it off, forced down the rage at being surprised as reality reasserted itself. He still had enough power to accomplish his mission. The enemy forces were not nearly so strong as to actually fend off his fleet. He would simply lose far more ships than calculated in the process.
It just maddened him that he couldn't understand the situation. None of it made sense. Nothing these people did seemed to make sense. Three flashes of Cerenkov blue punctuated the battle space as modified AA platform fighters launched from the three heroics that were leading the charge. The Odysseus, the Bellerophon, and the Boudica each put drone squadrons into space amid a cloud of picket drones. Stephanos took the vanguard position, letting Burner and Cardsharp fall into formation along with their drone wings as he checked the enemy formation. "Stay close, and don't deviate much from the prepared flight plan," he ordered the other two Archangel pilots, two of only four now left alive. "We're cutting right through the heaviest fighting, so try not to get nuked by friendly fire." Cardsharp laughed, just happy to be out from the helm of the Boudica finally. It wasn't that the bigger ship wasn't enjoyable to fly, in its own way, but she was doing exactly what she'd always wanted once more. "You got it, Stephanos. Nuked by her own side, bad. Got it." The three drone squadrons, each led by a modified Archangel, spread out as they flashed into the midst of the fighting, drones following along, and interpenetrated the enemy line of battle, heading for the big boys beyond the parasite destroyer screen. They dived through the gaps between the ships, flashing past at reckless speeds in order to avoid being targeted by any close-in point defense systems, only easing back slightly when they burst through the screen to meet the Imperial cruisers. Stephanos cleared his weapon safeties, flying right into the teeth of the enemy. "Archangel lead, Fox Hades." "Archangel 2, Fox Hades." "Archangel 3, Fox Hades." 18 drones loaded with antimatter six-shooters opened fire as one. Lord's own dreadnought, Empress Leon.
"Deploy countermeasures!"
Jason held on, knowing from previous experience that the countermeasures wouldn't be effective. No one had yet worked out how the enemy interceptors deployed their weapons, and at damn near the speed of light, the available sensor data that might explain it was in short supply, no matter how many ships they had scanning. White flashes erupted across the screens as the antimatter payload the interceptors unloaded on the Imperials interacted with regular matter, producing energetic results. The Leon wasn't exempt either, several detonations tearing into her, despite the screen of chaff thrown out to block the unblockable. The ship rumbled, the size of the dreadnought absorbing the devastating power of the negative matter munitions, but around her, cruisers began to die. Yesan gritted his teeth.
"Someone swat those pests!"
AEV Odysseus.
"Get those picket drones out at least 20 light seconds, or we'll never get enough of a warning to adapt,"
Eric ordered, shifting focus as a pair of enemy parasite destroyers adjusted their course to intercept and were highlighted on the combat display.
"Mila, kill those two!"
"Aye, Captain. Tasking T-cannons. Firing!"
Two spheres of nuclear fire erupted in space, signifying the deaths of the destroyers as ordered. But Eric had already moved on to the next crisis of the moment. The opening instances of the fight were the most chaotic he had ever experienced, including his time flying against the block. Transitioning right on top of cislunar space had been effective in getting them on site fast enough to accomplish something, but it had thrown them right into the mix without his normal period of being able to size up the enemy strategy. This wasn't a strategic move and countermove battle, as Eric had fought in space so many times before. This was a furious exchange of barely planned blows, a slugging match that would inevitably go to whomever could stand up the longest against the punches that were landing. That wasn't a situation that favored his ships and crews, as Eric knew too damn well.
"Drones in position, Captain!"
"Slave them to the task force's armor control system and let them run,"
Eric ordered. Damage reports from enemy fire dropped off almost immediately as the armor of the task group began to adapt ahead of the arrival of the lasers. It was a miracle only possible in a world with FTL communication, and still blew his mind. The drones were in many ways a shield that provided them with critical data, but they were also soft targets. Inevitably, even if the enemy wasn't targeting them directly, the drones would be struck by laser fire and vanish into the black in a brief flash of fire.
Odysseus stood on the bridge behind Eric, accessing the computer records and calmly running the calculations.
ETA to picket drone depletion, 5 minutes, 21 seconds, he said quietly.
Thank you, Odysseus, Eric said. Launch our last set at the 3-minute mark.
Roger, Commodore,
the intelligence said, taking over some of the tasks in order to lighten the workload for others as much as possible.